Tim Cook, The Genius Who Took Apple to the Next Level, written by Leanne Caney. I'm butchering that the author's name. Yes, so I've just finished reading the biography of Tim Cook. So obviously he's the current, as I'm recording this podcast in March of 2022. He is the current CEO of Apple. I think the world's most valuable company, I believe. Over $1 trillion valuation currently. Might be, I'm not too sure if it is, but I think it is. Definitely one of the most valuable companies on the planet, if not the most valuable company on the planet. One of my favorite companies as well. I've got all Apple products. I really enjoy using them, from iPhone, which I'm actually recording this podcast on right now, to, you know, my laptop, my MacBook Pro. Had an iMac before, you know, got iPads. Want to get the Apple Watch. A product I was reluctant on getting for so long, but now I really see the value in it, especially towards the healthcare. My interest in healthcare health has gone up a lot. I've always been interested in health, but it's gone up a lot. So that product really appeals to me, and just generally, I've seen it as the best company that I've received the best customer service from, like, ever, like. No company has provided better customer service than Apple for me. And I've been an Apple customer for like 15 years and I've never gone back. It's just every time I go to the store, they're always very helpful, always friendly. They always try and solve the problems. Even if they can't, they make an effort to do so. And it all comes from the top up. To the top down. Like, when you're at a company, like, the culture of the company is really important, and it comes from the leadership, and you really feel that, like, anywhere you work, you always feel the culture, and it always comes from the people running the company. Warren Buffett, like, talks about that in a lot of his interviews, and like in a few books that I've read about investing and about the importance of managers, you know, having good managers, because as they talk about in this book, a company is a group of people, you know. And Steve Jobs famously said, like, a company is a group of people that, you know, what's the great thing about companies is like it's designed in a way that can help getting a group of people together to pull into the same direction. So he said that it was one of mankind's best inventions for getting people together to, you know, pull in the same direction. And a lot of the things in this book, I can really feel why Apple is such a great company. You know, Steve Jobs, you know, obviously, he was the founder and CEO of Apple, and he's credited for a lot of the inventions. Obviously, him and Steve Wozniak started the company. You know, he started the iPhone, the iPod, etc., etc. You know, obviously, the first Mac. All of these things brought to the market. He was a creator, though. He wasn't a CEO. And you really see, like, he chose Tim Cook to take over as CEO, even when he was still alive, before, you know, obviously the diagnosis of his cancer. And when he asked Tim Cook to take over as CEO, like, he was already in that CEO position. And they mentioned that in the book, like, when he came back, because he was more with Johnny Ive about the products. He was a terrible CEO. He was a great innovator, you know, whereas Tim Cook is a fantastic CEO, you know. And the book even talks about it at the end. It's kind of ironic that Tim Cook really has great principles, and he's all about creating like a great company full of diversity, opportunities for different people, You know, he talks a lot about like opportunities for women, opportunities for minorities, bringing more of them into the company, which he's done. You know, like he's about sustainability, you know, using sustainable products. And you see in Apple's product launches, the way that they use, they want to use less e-waste, so they don't have like chargers in the new iPhones, because they know a lot of people have, who are upgrading their iPhones, already have chargers, so they don't put the extra charger in there to create a smaller footprint and to reduce e-waste, things of that nature, using recyclable materials in the products themselves. Like, he's really gandered all of that, and his core principle of privacy. I would say that was the most impressive chapter for me, was actually hearing about the court case in which there was somebody who had, I think it was a serial killer or someone who, some criminal had, that the police, the FBI, were trying to get into the person's iPhone for really like some evidence that they wanted to retrieve from the iPhone, and they were trying to force Apple to unlock the phone. But Tim Cook and Apple stood by the principles of privacy and refused, and said if they create a device, they create an algorithm or whatever to unlock the phone, this backdoor could spell like disaster for the entire platform, and could compromise all of Apple's users and punish everybody who's an Apple user, and leak privacy for everybody, because it was disgusting actually, the way like the FBI and, you know, were trying to villainize Apple for that, like saying that they weren't cooperating with the FBI and siding with this bad person or whatever, this criminal, and refusing to cooperate with this criminal investigation, etc. And they were willing to, like Tim Cook, he was willing to, you know, to put himself on the line. You know, he refused, and he was very adamant about that, because they believe in their principles, and I really respect that. And a lot of the public were against Apple actually at that time, because obviously there was a perception. It's all, media is all perception, and that's what I hate. That's what I love about the media, and that's what I hate about the media as well. It's the reason why I'm in media, is to make sure that we can control our stories and don't have people fabricating stories against us, because so we get two sides of a coin. Because they were, you know, trying to paint Apple as the villain in this case, because they're not cooperating with unlocking the iPhone. But the way I see it, Apple was the hero, because they were willing, and Tim Cook was obviously at the helm of this. I can't imagine the kind of pressure as a CEO. You're in this job and you're having to go to court, and you're having to defend the fact that you can't open a phone. It's a very tough situation to be in. It's a tough dilemma, because on one hand, you want to help the FBI or whatever catch an evil person, or prosecute them, or catch them, or get the evidence that needs to apprehend this person, whatever. But on the other hand, it violates the principles and the personal privacy of millions of other people who had nothing to, who are innocent, have nothing to do with that, good law-abiding citizens. And by creating this kind of device that would have like compromised that, and they didn't even end up going to court to fight that case, because in the end the FBI ended up unlocking the phone, so they dropped the case. They found a way, another company to do it, and they were successful doing it. So Apple never got to fight the case. So they obviously, their principle of not unlocking the phone was great, because they weren't punished for that. But in the book it says that Tim Cook was kind of disappointed that they didn't, because he was ready, you know, he was ready to go to court. He had his case ready to defend Apple's principles of privacy and to explain that that would be a violation of human rights, because he believes that, you know, privacy is a fundamental human right, you know, just like freedom of speech, you know, and things of that nature. He really believes it, like, and I do absolutely respect that, you know, and as an Apple customer, I respect that, you know. And they were, he was willing to put himself on the line to fight for the rights of his customers, you know, and for the principles of his company, you know, to not, and I respect anyone who has that strength of character and tenacity. That's what a leader is supposed to be doing. It's supposed to lead by example, even through tough times, not fold to popular beliefs or, you know, to a hard situation like that, you know, where they're being painted as the villain. It's being this is the news is making the spin that Apple and Tim Cook are the villain because they're not helping with this criminal investigation, when actually what they're doing is standing by their principles and not violating that. Because who's to say that the FBI or whatever, who, you know, you don't trust any of these people, really. You don't fully trust any of these people. Who's to say that they're not going to then abuse that power of the ability to unlock phones and to find out information about anyone, or to twist things, or to do all sorts of things, you know? So I totally, like, stand by what they did, really. And even if I didn't agree with it and I was on the other end, I respect Tim Cook's resilience and his ability to stand by his principles and do what he believes was right. You know, obviously it was a really tough situation to be in, because you don't ever want to be asked, and they should never have really been asked to be put in that position, to be honest with you. I think it's ridiculous that they would need to unlock a phone to help with their investigation. They should have other ways of being able to deal with that situation, instead of bullying Apple, as the way I see it, to try and unlock a phone so that they could have access to private information, despite who it's coming from, you know. So, you know, that chapter was very, 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 I had a lot of respect for Tim Cook reading that chapter. And it just shows, like, some of the difficulties that CEOs have to go through. You know, it's like when I was reading Bob Iger, the former CEO of Disney, in the first chapter, there's a horrific story about a child that was killed by an alligator at one of their resorts, and how he had to deal with that, and how he chose to obviously go and consult with the family, and, you know, all the tough kind of things that he had to go through in terms of that. And it's stuff that I didn't even know about that story. And also there was a shooter or something like that was targeting people, and Disney were execs and things of that nature. And there's so many stories like that these people have to deal with. It's on a, you know, it's not just the business stuff, which is a task in and of itself, you know, running a multi-billion dollar company, you know, $1 trillion evaluated company, you know, an international company. It's not really an American company, it's an international company, hundreds of thousands of employees worldwide, product lines, supply chains, you know, so much cutting edge technology that affects the lives of, you know, hundreds of millions of people across the globe. But then you have to deal with all these other issues as well. And it's just amazing the resilience of some of these people and the strength, you know. You know, but the first chapter is about, like, the death of Steve Jobs and how Steve had called him over, you know, just, I think this was a couple of weeks before he died. Maybe a month or a couple of months before he died, and how he called him over to kind of say that he needs him to take over as CEO. And, you know, he wasn't really sure about it. He was kind of, Tim Cook was kind of like, are you sure? Like, you want me to, so you, if there's an advertisement and it needs signing off, then I can sign it off without your permission, you know, because Steve Jobs was very controlling. Steve would say, well, you know, I'd think you would want to consult me, but yeah, that's the point. So he, it was obviously a tough time because obviously Steve was very ill. But Steve Jobs chose him, so chose Tim Cook. And Tim Cook is a very different person to Steve Jobs. The book at the end even says it's kind of ironic that Steve Jobs came across as a very hippie, you know, conservative, liberal, should I say, guy, you know, innovative, kind of creative guy. But the way he ran Apple was very, like, killer, you know. It's like a Fortune 500 killer. They didn't do charitable work. They, you know, he was very tough on his employees as well. He wasn't like the best CEO, to be honest, until the end, really. Remember, he was fired from Apple. But the irony of that was, you look at Tim Cook, and he's a very, you know, he's from that kind of background where he's, you know, he's an engineering background, you know, and business. He's a master of the supply chain. He's master of supply chains, very diligent CEO. But he was very progressive in the way that he is all about people first and understanding what, again, what Steve Jobs said about the miracle of a company is it's about people coming together for a common good. You know, and it's nothing without its people. Business is not, when people say that term about it's not personal, it's just business, I know when people say that they don't really understand business. Business is personal. It's about people coming together. It's people's energy, lives, time, talent coming together, and that's very personal, you know, to create something for the market. And it's personal to us. These goods and services are personal to our lives. So it's all personal. It's all about people. And Tim Cook really understood that. He really seems to understand that. He really seems to understand that, you know. And again, like, just some of the stories about his past and how he, where he came from in the South. You know, he came from a place in the South where, was it Louisiana? I can't remember the exact location, in the South in America. And as we know, in America, there's still a lot of problems with racism, especially in the South of the United States. And he experienced that, you know. He talks about how one day he saw, like, the Ku Klux Klan burning the cross on a black family's house, and, you know, how that he was horrified by that, and how that kind of, like, changed his life, really, when he saw that kind of stuff. And he just, you know, and also the fact that he's a gay man, he's a gay man from the South. And, you know, obviously that's not seen as a highly, you know, acceptable thing for somebody to be, you know, it's in that region of the world as well. So his childhood and background, again, he had to deal with, or he saw a lot of prejudices against, you know, black people, you know, obviously, again, himself being a gay man, and having to, you know, deal with the kind of prejudices of that. And he kind of just, I think that really drove him in some of his beliefs, even as you see, as a CEO of Apple, you know, he's a very private person, but he came out, you know, about his publicly about being gay, you know, and he was doing that to kind of have an example of a successful gay man who's the CEO of the biggest company on the planet, and how that was really just to help other people realize that it's okay to be open about who you are, and it's not a problem, because obviously no one was really judging him when he came out about that because of who he is, and his results speak for themselves. You know, under his tenure, like, Apple became a $1 trillion company. Under his tenure, like, Apple, you know, launched like products like the Apple Watch. You know, it's been more successful than ever, company than it ever was under Steve Jobs, in the last 10 years. And, you know, that's all down to, or not all down to, but it's under the leadership of Tim Cook. And people, again, like I've always said this, you don't respect people because of what they are. You respect people for who they are and what they've done. You know, respect needs to be earned. And he earned the respect of Silicon Valley, of the business world, and of people in general because of what he's done, because of who he is. Not because of the fact that he's gay or because he's a man or this, that, and the other. You know, you respect people because of what they do, you know, and how they carry themselves and their results, you know, in life. You treat everybody like a human being with decency. But respect, for me, it needs to be earned. And he's earned his respect. And but you shouldn't have to just treat him decent because of that respect that we've got from his business skills. You should just show human decency to everybody, despite what, you know, their sexual orientation or their sex or race or any of that business. You also, the only thing I disagree with was it, and you know, like, he talks about diversity and how there should be more women in the Apple and in Silicon Valley in general, in the tech industry. But then people make the argument, hey, women aren't as interested. But he doesn't want to accept that, you know. And he looks at, like, Apple's results and how, you know, how they've obviously recruited a lot of females and a lot of minorities in the company and in senior positions in the company, as opposed to just the lower levels. But it's not enough, you know, there needs to be more. And I respect where he's coming from because of his background and because of, you know, his beliefs. But, you know, I think things can go from one extreme to another. And I think in our society today, we're very much about this so-called diversity. And I think diverse people, having a diverse company, I do agree with, like, a lot of the points he makes about diversity being a good thing for companies, and also about, you know, having multiple different people from different backgrounds bring different ideas and themes, you know, rather than having, like, the same people, like, from the same, like, backgrounds running in a company without different perspectives, it doesn't allow innovation to flourish. Whereas when you have different people to get coming together, you get, like, that different perspectives that can really help boost the company and boost the creativity in a company and the financial success of a company. I agree with that, but what I don't agree with is pendulum. What seems to be happening in our society is pendulum swings from one extreme to the other. So the extreme we had before, where people were being excluded because they're a female, or being excluded because they're black or whatever, Latino or whatever, which is ridiculous, and I definitely don't agree with that. The other thing I don't agree with is what we're doing in our society now, where we're needing to include people because we need more diversity and we don't have enough people. So it's like we have to hire more women in this role, in these roles, because there's not enough women in these roles, or there's not enough black people in these roles, and all of this business. And I don't agree with that either. I think both are extremes. And Charlie Munger, the business partner of Warren Buffett, one thing he said that I really agree with is you need to be aware of extreme ideologies. And I think both are extreme ideologies, because the whole point of the problem we had before of excluding people because of their race or sexual orientation or their sex or whatever, was because, or religion or whatever, is because we weren't looking at the talent on meritocracy. We weren't looking at the people and their skills and what they bring to the table. We weren't judging them on their merit. We were just excluding them based on silly surface level things. Whereas I believe in hiring the best person for the job. I don't care who it is, whether it be a male, female, whatever. But the problem is now is that we're trying to force this diversity and just it almost feels like we're trying to meet a quota. So if there's a black female and a white male going for the same job, well, we have to hire the black female just because we need more women and we need more black people. So she ticks both of those diversity boxes. So let's just hire her. I don't agree with that. I think it's wrong, and I really don't agree with that. And I'm talking as a black male, you know. So I actually feel like white males are actually like the most like. The hardest, like, I think they're the ones dealing, actually being discriminated against the most in this kind of environment. And I'm not saying that's what Tim Cook was obviously doing or anything like that. I just think that it's just my, I'm just talking here on kind of what I'm seeing in our society where we're going from one extreme to the other. And I think we need to be careful of that. You know, I'm all for hiring the best person. If they happen to be a female, then yeah, hire her. If she's the best person, yeah, let's hire her. But don't look at the fact that she's a female and just put her in the position because of that. To me, I would hate to be, and I never want to be given a job or a position because they need a black person there. That for me would really piss me off, and I would just resign. Because I know, I want to know that they at least thought I was the best person for the job, and they're hiring me based on who I am and my merit, my meritocracy, my skills, my leadership skills, my technical skills, what I bring to the table, both hard and soft skills, you know, as well as my personality, obviously, because you need to get along with the people and the culture of the company. Those things are the more important. Those things are the important facts, not the color of my skin or my sexual orientation or my race or my religion. None of that actually. The point is not to see those things when you're looking at the position. And I think we're going way too far to the other side where we're just trying to hire people because they are those things, as opposed to just hiring the best person for the job rather than including or excluding them because of their sex or their race or this or that and the other. I think they're both extreme ideologies and we need to be careful of that. But I do understand where he's coming from with that because, you know, especially because of his background, and traditionally Silicon Valley has been predominantly white males and people have been excluded because they're not white males. And they're trying to obviously fight those discriminations by bringing in more females, bringing in more minorities that have been excluded, who are well qualified for the job. And I'm all for the best person getting the job no matter who they are. So that's just my one gripe about that, because he's obviously very passionate about that. And that chapter, you know, I kind of disagreed with that a little bit. Although I see the good in what he's trying to do, because obviously he's seen a lot of discrimination and he understands that there has been a lot. Which there has, but we can't go from one extreme to the other. And again, I'm not saying that he is, but I'm just saying that's a commentary on society in general. But like I said, like, he really lived up to the position of CEO. Man wakes up at like 3:30 in the morning, you know, which is crazy. Like, talked about his routine. You know, a lot of these CEOs do wake up early, not all of them, but like a lot of them do. You know, he does his workouts, you know, has his breakfast. What else does he do? And he comes into the office quite early. He leaves early as well. He makes sure that he gets home on time as well. he seems to be good at like organizing his life and his and having the right, you know, like he knows when when it's time to work and it's time to go home. And he just has he has a good routine, you know, that seems to work for him. But one thing I liked is the fact that he, at lunchtime, he'll go and sit with random employees. So he's known for doing that. So Apple have the oval or the circular kind of office. So that was designed to kind of create this kind of circular kind of environment. And it's got like the green in the middle. You see it in their presentations. It's really nice. But, you know, the cafeteria area, again, it's open. And he made an effort to go and sit with like random people at lunch. So I find that really interesting that he did that. So again, I like that because I believe, again, you need to treat people like people. You know, you're working with people. So it's just kind of like, the fact that he was open to, you know, going to meet people, talk to different people, you know, and, you know, just touch base with other human beings. And that way you're obviously going to get new ideas as well, because you could have conversations with people that you won't usually have. And people from all different positions have great ideas. And just because they're in that position doesn't mean they're any lesser value to you know, they're in that position right now, but you don't know where they're going to be in 5 years and 10 years time. And either way, you still get insights from different people that you wouldn't necessarily get in the C-suite meetings, you know. So I like the fact that he was humble. Well, he is humble enough to do that, you know, because some people are very hierarchical. And they only want to talk to people who are the CEO or the CFO or COO or whatever, you know, or the vice president of product sales and whatever. They don't want to talk to those people. But I like the fact that he's willing to do that, you know. But yeah, like I said, master of the supply chain. One of the funniest stories in this was they were talking about like a meeting that they were in, and I forget what it was, but there was something about maybe a supply chain issue in China, or product sales in China were low, something like that. I can't remember the exact details. And he was talking to one of the VP of sales in that area of the Asia. Was it the VP of sales or the VP? I can't remember the person's position. But anyway, he was like, well, we need to like get that sorted, you know, in the middle of a meeting. And then he carried on talking, and then the guy was still there, and he gets up and he looks up and he goes, why are you still here? And the man literally got up and he left the meeting, and he bought a plane ticket to China, and he just one way ticket, and he just left and he moved to China to go and get Apple's stuff sorted out. And I was like, wow, okay, I hope they paid you for that trip, mate, you know, because he's just like, why are you still here? Oh, I found that so funny, like, that he was like, well, we need to get this sorted out. And he's like, why are you still here? And the man just booked a plane ticket to China, a one-way ticket, and he just moved. Didn't pack his bags or anything, just went straight to the airport. They must obviously be paying him well, or that was on the company. You know, well, Apple can afford it. They're a $1 trillion company. So, you know, speaking of which, Apple stock price has gone up since Cook's been CEO. You know, like, their valuation is huge, you know. So over $1 trillion in valuation. A little overpriced for me at the moment, I think, if you're looking at it as an investing purposes. But it's a phenomenal company in terms of like what they do, in terms of, you know, the cash flow, in terms of their cash reserves, the products, you know, the marketing. It's just fantastic. And again, they're doing all that by still being the leaders in like sustainability, renewable, and they're pioneers in renewable energy. They're thinking about the environment, e-waste, you know, recycling, you know, your old iPhone to create components for the new iPhones and things of that nature. It's really good, as well as all the other stuff, like the human stuff, like I said earlier, with the whole diversity and inclusion that Tim Cook really believes in, as well as, you know, just in terms of like how to treat people as well, the customer service. Yeah, that's another thing. He talks about how there was a lot of people in the company that were quite toxic, basically. And when he was first CEO, a lot of people doubted him when he was given that position, because he's not Steve Jobs, he's not creative. Why is he in that position? A lot of people doubted him, and he had to fire a couple of people, because a few people in like top positions that really weren't pulling their weight, because they were causing a lot of problems internally. And one of them was a guy from the UK, actually. And people have been complaining about him. And he had cut a bunch of costs. I think it was VP of the Apple stores. And he cut a bunch of costs and things of that nature. And he'd done it in one of the UK companies. I can't remember which one it was. Well, I think it was a stationery company. I can't remember now, but like, forgive me on that one. But yeah, so a lot of people had like written to Tim Cook and said like, no, nah, he's not really good. And that, you know, that kind of thing, even though like he had been, you know, financially he was good, but he wasn't as good as, with people and all of that. And he was notorious for cutting costs, and he did that at a lot of the stores, so the customer service was hurt by that. And he immediately fired the guy. I think, was it not so long from him hiring? Maybe 2 weeks, or not 2 weeks. It might have been a bit longer than that, but it was a short period of time. We had hired and fired the guy, and he obviously got a lot of criticism for that. But it was a good move, because you could see what he was doing wasn't working. You know, it wasn't working. And that's, again, strength of character to remove people in a company that just aren't working for the company, especially people who don't, who are causing a lot of friction, you know, because customer service and soft skills are very underlooked in business, and that will have been. But now I think people and businesses are really realizing that the soft skills are very important, and to survive in the 21st century business, you need to have those soft skills. You need to have the diversity quote-unquote cards. You know, you need to be inclusive, you need to be progressive, you need to be about sustainability, you know, because that's important for the planet, because we can't continue to burn fossil fuels, we can't continue to create a lot of the e-waste, and we can't continue to not be sustainable in the way that we conduct our businesses. And these are really important points, and these are really things that Tim Cook pioneers, you know, as well as the privacy issue. Again, that's a very human issue, but it's also a business issue, because that's a selling point for Apple and for using Apple's ecosystem. You know that they're not going to mess around with your privacy, or at least you believe it, you know. Because, you know, with Facebook and all the other companies in Silicon Valley, Facebook, Google, etc., they're run on data and sharing human data. You know, when you're in Facebook, you're getting recommendation of ads because of the data that you've shared with them. You know, when I use Facebook, I accept that. You know, I'm not really going there for privacy. But with Apple, I know that I can get privacy. I know my phone isn't going to be compromised. Well, things can happen, but you know that at least they're not, that's not their business model. They're not trying to profit off your data. And it's very different from most tech companies, because when you look at, because I've been reading about, like, obviously the companies in China, Baidu, Tencent, Alibaba, you know, all the, you know, the big three in China, and how, and just the Chinese economy in general, and how they're run by data. Like, the government controls the data. Those companies, you know, they have a lot of data. There's no privacy, like, stands in China. It's more about, like, people share the data and they accept that that's what the government want, and the whole system is built on that, and it allows, like, those companies to be very valuable because they have so much data, so much more than the US companies, because of that, less, they don't have that friction of you know, Congress and, you know, people fight being concerned of violation of human rights and human privacy and things of that nature. So it allows them to make better business decisions and to serve the customers even better, because essentially when we're on the internet, we don't really care about privacy. When you're on YouTube and you see your homepage being fed the videos that you're being fed, that's because the algorithm knows what you've been watching your last 20 videos, and it's showing things that it knows you're interested in based on your watch time, based on your engagement, you know, based on your viewer satisfaction. When you hit the like button, it knows, oh, you know, he's interested in, you know, martial arts videos, so let me show him more martial arts videos. So it's using that data to serve the customer, to bring them more of what they want, and to obviously keep them on the platform longer so that they can serve them more ads, which is great for the business, but it's also great for the consumer because the consumer gets more of what they want. But Apple don't operate like that, and it's kind of unique in Silicon Valley and in the tech industry as a whole, because most of the tech giants and most of these big tech companies, they're run by big data and using big data to serve us as the consumer, you know, to serve the market and to provide us with more of what we want, to provide us with exactly what we want. You know, you go to Amazon and you go to the homepage, Amazon already know all the things you've bought. They understand what you've been looking for. It serves you more of things you will be interested in so that they can satisfy your needs as a customer, and it satisfies their needs as a business because they know that they can target you with the correct advertisements and the correct products. And same with Facebook, same with Google, same with all of them, same with Alibaba. But again, Apple's not doesn't work that way. And it's quite interesting. So they talk about as well Apple's potential of having a... because they've been talking about this for a while, about Apple potentially getting into the car industry and an Apple car. But I'm more bullish, and they talked about actually some of the, you know, that it's not really like confirmed, it's just like they mentioned some of the autonomous vehicles on the site that they have, etc., and how Steve Jobs was like very interested in those kind of things, you know, you know, like Tesla, I'm very interested in obviously what they do, etc. But, you know, Tim Cook keeps his his cards to his chest. He's not like revealing anything until the last minute really about that. But I'm thinking that more augmented reality is going to be a thing, like an augmented glasses and things of that nature. But remember, when Apple launched the products, because when... They don't necessarily hit it out of the park. They don't necessarily come straight out the gate, you know, with superstar hits. The iPhone didn't, the iPod didn't, none of those products did. The Apple Watch is a great example. Like me personally, I wasn't interested in the Apple Watch for so many years. Now I'm interested in the Apple Watch. Now I barely became interested in the Apple Watch over the last year. You know, and it's 2022, so I only got interested in 2021, and it's been out for a while. Like, we now have 7 iterations of the Apple Watch, and I'm only interested in it now. But like, there was a point where they talk about, you know, when they launched the iPhone 10, and Tim Cook talks, you know, like how that was they talked about how that was quite innovative, because that was the first time they used Face ID, the notch on the iPhone was big, but they removed the Touch ID home button, and then there was a bit of resistance to that. Or they're talking about people weren't happy, especially about the price point, because it started at $999, and it went up to over $1,200, something like that, price point, from depending on like your data plans and what have you, like your storage plan, data storage plans for your phone. So what Tim Cook does, and I've seen him do it in the interview as well, is he's really good at defending Apple's premium products, because he sees it as a premium company, and he says that like this is the price is a reflection of them offering a premium service, you know. So he's happy to defend the fact that the price is a premium product price, because it's a premium product that we're offering to the market. And I respect that, because I think you need to charge, and I do believe in this, you need to charge what the price of what you're offering is worth, you know. And I think we're too much in a culture about getting everything cheap, 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 or free. And it's like, no, you get what you pay for. And at the end of the day, Apple are trying to create the best products on the market. So the consumer, if they want the product, they'll pay for it. And it showed with the iPhone 10, because it was their best launch. And, you know, it had the best launch ever. And it really, and it steamrolled. Like, it did really, really well. It didn't do what analysts thought it would do. Like, they thought that they would have to cut the prices in half because the sales would be down because it was too expensive, etc., etc. And obviously there was a lot of changes with the Face ID and the notch and the loss of the home button and the Touch ID. But that didn't end up being the case, you know. And again, Tim Cook defended the price, and it ended up being like one of their best products, because most people didn't, you know, that didn't stop them from buying the phone. So he was right about that, because they had created a quality product. He knew that people were going to pay for it, because they believe in Apple and they believed in the product, and because they created a quality product that, again, Tim did a great job of justifying the price and the fact that it was a premium product, and he was creating a premium product that had the high demand. So the iPhone, again, is probably one of the most profitable, most successful products in history, really. And he's been a big part of that, you know. Because what was the last phone that they had before Steve Jobs died? I think it was the iPhone 5. I can't remember if that was the last one Steve Jobs saw when he was alive. But, you know, since then, you know, we've had the iPhone 6, 6S, 7, the 8, you know. And obviously the 10 was a massive launch. We're on the iPhone 13 now. But I think as we move into augmented reality and virtual reality and all of this metaverse stuff, I think with Apple, like, we're going to see more innovation, and we're going to see Tim Cook leading this company to the next era of technology. And with the race for AI, the artificial intelligence, augmented reality and virtual reality, it'll be interesting to see the direction that Apple go. I really believe that I think Apple are going to be very much on augmented reality more than virtual reality, because I think their product line serves that already. They already have the augmented reality device in terms of on your camera, and I think smart glasses will be a thing, like wearable tech. They're already, you know, pioneering wearable tech. You know, you look at the success of the AirPods and how, like, I thought that was a waste of money before when it first came out, until now I have them and I couldn't live without them. I see how seamlessly they work across all your devices. It's small, compact. frictionless. You don't have to worry about wires and all that business, and it just works across all your devices. Instantaneously syncs to all your devices, your iPhone, your iPad, your MacBook Pro, whatever. It just syncs automatically, and you don't have to pair it. You don't have to worry about any of that business. And then you've got the watch. You know, again, a product I didn't think was that great, but with their move to health and wellness, and the fact that, you know, you can do things like check your blood glucose and, you know, the steps that you've taken, your workouts, you know, they've got Apple workouts, things of that nature to keep you fit and healthy. You know, you can tell your heartbeats, your blood pressure, all of this kind of stuff, especially for people who have like heart conditions or blood conditions or diabetes, you know, as well as people who just want to be fit and healthy and to track their fitness and health and how many steps they're taking, etc. I think they're in the wearable tech industry already, and I think they even talked about possibly purchasing Peloton, which is like an exercise bike company, which I think would be a good acquisition for Apple actually. But I think with augmented reality, like wearing wearable tech like Apple glasses would be really good, because I think it's the evolution from the iPhone. So instead of looking down at your iPhone all the time, you'll be looking up at the world, and you can interact with a heads up display, like you see Iron Man, you know, in the Avengers movies, or in, you know, the Iron Man movies with, you know, Friday, his AR system. So you could see it with Siri, and then you could see like being able to use voice technology to interact with your AI as well. So, or with your AR, should I say, augmented reality. So I think that's the direction they're going, really. But again, Tim Cook keeps his cards to his chest, you know, to the last minute until the announcement. So that's one thing he does very well. You know, again, master of the supply chain, master of running Apple. And I really enjoyed this book. It made me have a lot of respect for Tim Cook. Like I said, like some of his setbacks, some of his, you know, stepping into Steve Jobs' shoes, the ability to be resilient when the US, FBI were trying to get him to unlock the phone of this criminal. But standing by the principles of privacy and not doing that, you know, and willing to go to court and fight that. And I just think that was so good, you know, in terms of like all of the stuff that he does. And so, you know, he's a shrewd businessman, very strict, very disciplined. But again, he seemed very humanitarian as well, more than Steve Jobs actually. So he's a far better CEO, and I think some people are just better in certain roles, you know. Steve Jobs, I think, was more he was more of a creative, him and Johnny Ive, you know, more creative. And Tim Cook, again, even though he is creative, he has the ability better to run a company as a CEO and understand the people and understand, you know, what, like Apple can be a successful company, but also still be progressive in how it treats its people, how it includes people, and also how it treats the environment and charity, you know. And Tim Cook really proved that he is a great CEO and the reason why Apple is such a success. One thing I would want to say is, he was very, a lot of the staff talk about how when you go into meetings, you have to prepare, because he would quiz you and he would ask you like a bunch of questions. And if you didn't, you know, and that's one thing he was known for, like you'd ask you a bunch of questions about your role and, you know, God forbid you get it wrong, you know. So he wasn't like Steve Jobs where yell and shout. He's a very calm guy, but of course you don't want to, like, he wants you to be on top of your game. So People, if they're going into a meeting with him, they'd have to be prepared to be quizzed, you know. And I think that's a huge lesson to be good at what you do, you know. It's not to be perfect, but it's to be good at what you do, know what you do. In the world, I think, like, today, people just don't seem to really pride themselves on what they do. It's like they're just trying to do the easiest thing, you know, and just get by. I find that a lot. Like, even with delivery people, I'm noticing the quality is going down. They'll just leave your parcels outside without, you know, actually knocking on your door. They'll just chuck it and leave it, you know. They can't find the door, you know, whereas before, like, people would never have those problems. They'd greet you, you'd say good afternoon and just make sure you get your delivery. They wouldn't have problems finding your door and things of that nature. I'm just noticing a lot that there seems to be, as the world, the technology is getting smarter, it's almost like a lot of the people are getting dumber, you know, and they're lacking those soft skills as well. But yeah, I think it's important to be on top of your game and understand your craft and to take pride in what you do. And I think that's a great example of him just testing his people, making sure they know everything about the products, the services, the job that they're doing, and that they can answer the questions that he's asking, because they need to be on top of the game, because he has high standards for Apple and the service that it brings to the market. And it's the reason why Apple is a $1 trillion valuated company, and the reason why Tim Cook is the genius that took Apple to the next level. Anyway, I really enjoyed that book. I love reading biographies. You always learn so much, and I cannot wait to read the next one. So, have you read Tim Cook? And I'd love to know your thoughts on his life and his job that you think that, or how do you think he's done as a CEO? The job that he's done, I'd love to know your thoughts. Anyway, I'll see you next time for another podcast, for a book review, for movie reviews, martial arts, and the lot. Peace.